Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is Attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.
Welcome to the V Show. I am not Bob Valvano, but we do have Scott Satterfield at the podium. We will go to that now.
About getting an opportunity to play postseason, that was huge for our team to be able to play in a bowl game, which is fun. Going to be around these seniors a little bit longer, which leads us into this week. You know, senior day for us, and an opportunity to finish off the season with 7 wins, and you know, playing a good Kentucky team, a team that's won 8 games, and you know, you think about what they've been able to do this year. You know, transfer quarterback, transfer receiver, both of them very productive. Running back is very good. Rodriguez, he's been solid for the last couple of years. And, you know, and it starts up front for them. They got a really strong offensive line. One thing I remember from 2019 is O-line, D-line was very strong on both sides of the ball. They're still that way this year. And defensively, you know, they're a defense that doesn't give up many big plays. They keep everything in front of them. They rally to the ball, play hard, and you know, and then normally it keeps them in a game defensively, but not giving up these big plays. So, very solid football team. But looking forward to the opportunity for them to host them this year and to play here in front of our crowd, and hopefully we'll have a great crowd, and that's going to be a great atmosphere Saturday night.
Scott, you mentioned the transformation of the offensive line from when you got here until now. Can you kind of put in words how far they have come, and then how difficult it is after a couple of years? Then you get a new coach also. I mean, to throw that mix in there.
Yeah, you know, it's man, it's hard to put in words. You know how far they've come along, and you know, just from where we were at and to where we are now is really night and day. I mean, you know, and a lot of those guys that are playing now were playing then, you know, and they were young and they've grown a lot and they've become really, really good football players. I mean, obviously, Becton was a great player that we had that year. But then the rest of them kind of guys have just grown into it. And, you know, Adonis Boone, Renato, you know, Caleb Chandler's played. I think Caleb Chandler's had an outstanding season this year. He's an all-ACC offensive lineman this year, in my opinion, for sure. Cole Bentley's had a really solid year, and he's played a ton of football. He's kind of the veteran of the group. You know, Brian Hudson has come in here and done, man, a great job for us at center and at guard. You know, and then, you know, Michael Gonzalez is a true freshman, has really added to the mix with those guys up front. It's just Trevor Reed's a guy, we end up signing him from GMC, and very athletic offensive tackle. So, you know, just kind of put those all together, and they've played really, really solid this year. And I think, you know, going from one of the worst, you know, teams with tackles for loss and sacks given up to one of the better ones, you know, it's been great to see. And, you know, all the while, we've still been able to run the football and throw the ball. We're very balanced on offense. You know, we'll average over 200 throwing and running again for the third straight year, which I don't – there's probably only a couple teams in the country that have done that over the last 3 years. You know, and that says a lot about the guys up front because that's where it all starts. So, you know, really proud of them.
Scott, with this game not being played last year, is there maybe a greater appreciation for this rivalry in this game?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think it's always going to be a great appreciation just playing your rival team, you know, team right here in our state. So, yeah, it was unfortunate we didn't get to play last year with everything that went on with the COVID. And, you know, and we're glad we're playing this year. You know, I'm glad it's here back, you know, because I guess it's alternating years, you know, whatever. But I'm glad we decided to, since we didn't play last year, to bring it back here, which is good. You know, and it's, you know, surprising to me that the Louisville, Kentucky has not played for, you know, I'm saying, you know, I don't know how it states back to maybe in the late 90s, you know, but why, you know, this, how I have not played 50, 60, 70 years, you know, every year or whatever. That was pretty interesting to me to know that. But, you know, but I think it's I'm glad we're playing. I think it's just a great natural rivalry. Two really good conferences coming together at the end of the season. And, you know, so, yeah, it's exciting.
Scott, the importance of this Kentucky game is –
it seems like it's layered. Like, obviously, but helping recruiting helps just with the program in general. Where do you see the most important part of winning this game?
Yeah.
And if you do win, how do you feel like it could help you recruiting-wise?
Yeah, I think it's just big in recruiting. It's big in, you know, when you think about ACC, SEC matchup, when you think about just walking around every day when you're going out to eat, it's big. In our everyday life, I think it's that's obviously big in recruiting. You know, when you think about the state of Kentucky and, in recruiting in this state. So there's a lot of facets that make this huge for us. And then bragging rights for a whole year. You know, you play once a year in football, and then you got to wait a whole year before you get to do it again. So there's just a lot that is on this game each and every year. And it's, you better have the passion. You better have that sense of urgency. You better have that focus, everything that leads up to this game this week. And that's what we've talked about starting on Sunday.
Scott, you mentioned after the Duke game that in 2019 you didn't have a full understanding and appreciation for what this rivalry means to Louisville, and that now you do. What was it between now and that game last year that you learned about this rivalry that makes it so important for not only Louisville but the fan base as well?
Yeah, I obviously knew it was a very important game. It was obviously a rival game, but for me personally, I had just gotten here, and you didn't get a full sense of it, me personally. But I think after living here now for 3 years and being a part of it and going to the basketball games and then, living with the fact that we got beaten in 19, that it stings big time. And as I mentioned earlier, what it means for our program is huge. But I think, for me personally, as you walk around every day and you're going to bump into somebody that's a Louisville fan or a Kentucky fan every single day. So I'd rather us be on the winning side of that. So you got a little bit of bragging rights.
Last week you were impacted by some sickness, and 2 years back when you played Kentucky, how is your team feeling this week, coming in on Monday to play on Saturday?
Yeah, we got through that game last week. We had several that were out sick and or playing sick, and we came in Sunday. We had some more guys that popped up. Fortunately, it's Sunday, so those guys hopefully will be ready to go for practice tomorrow. You kind of got your fingers crossed a little bit right now because we've had some of this sickness, and I don't think it's going away. It's a matter of, can we keep our guys healthy over the next 4 or 5 days before we get out there and play on Saturday. So, Sunday we were missing a few guys, but they'll be back tomorrow, so we'll see. I think only maybe one guy, maybe two, came in this morning. So, hopefully we're on the back end of it. We'll obviously know more as we get through the end of the week, but we kind of got our fingers crossed and, wearing some masks around the building and washing our hands really good, so hopefully we don't spread any more.
Scott, with the SEC expanding and a lot of talk about a 9-game schedule, conference schedule, do you think this rivalry is in any danger? Do you think that Kentucky will keep wanting to play if they have to play an extra SEC opponent?
Yeah, I don't know. That'll be interesting to see if you're playing a 9-game schedule that only leaves 3 non-conference, and how are you going to schedule that? I think that's been a huge debate for everybody throughout the college landscape of how do you schedule your non-conference, particularly if you're having to play 9 conference games. It's a much easier when you can play 8 conference games and have 4 of the non-conference to be able to have a little bit more maneuverability to, see who you want to play. So it will be interesting if we did go to 9 and where you're limited. And if you're playing such a tough schedule week in and week out, do you want to continue your non-conference to be tough as well? I think that's a dilemma and a question that administrators and have to find out and figure out. As coaches, pretty much we just play who they tell us to play. So, I think, you can kind of just look at what we've played this year in non-conference and what Kentucky's played this year. It's a different philosophy, really, of how you schedule your non-conference. And I think it just goes to whatever school you're at, what your philosophy may be. Well, I like playing the game. I would advocate playing us, and continue this game because I just think it's a great for this region. It's a great rivalry game, and I think the fans on both sides of it love it. And I think I like it in every other sport as well. I just think it's a game that should be played in all our sports because we're so close, and that's two really good programs.
Scott, you mentioned receivers. Jordan Watkins has come out of, I mean, this year just seems like a really good safety blanket for Malik. Just what have you seen from him this year as he continues to step into a pretty big role? And I know he emphasizes him, Marshawn, a lot of they throw 502 at you out a lot and just their importance of embracing the city too.
Well, I think that Watkins just brings a just a confidence to Malik to know that you throw him the football, he's going to catch it, man. He's got great hands. He's got great body control. He's got some really good speed. Usually big things happen when he catches it, first downs or touchdowns. I think Marshawn's the same way. He just feels very comfortable throwing him the ball. You know, Marshawn, if the ball's in his vicinity, he's going to catch it. And he's going to convert to a first down most of the time as well. So, it's just both of those guys have made a ton of plays for us in a passing game. And, it's awesome that they're right here in Louisville. Got here in different ways. We recruited Watkins pretty hard, and then Marshawn was a walk-on and has been a great player for us as well. So yeah, both of those guys are an integral part of our passing game. And they do it different ways. I think Jordan's more of the speed guy, and Marshawn, more works underneath. But they're both equally as valuable to our offense. We hoped he would. I think when we put him through, he came to our camp and put him through a lot of drills, and he could really run. He had great ball skills, but he also showed the toughness in the camp because we made it pretty tough on him. Man, he didn't bat an eye, so you think somebody like that's going to come in here and work his way into the starting lineup, and he did it pretty daggone quick. And he's been great. He's been great for us. He's been awesome, and he's a guy that as you look to call him plays. All right, he's a guy. How can we get a ball to him? How can we maneuver to get him open? Because we know big things are going to happen.
Scott, when you have a guy like Malik that's playing the way that he's playing, especially the last few weeks, pretty much the whole season. His ability to run and be able to connect down the field, does it change you as a play caller? Like, do you feel like you've maybe been a little bit more aggressive than you normally probably would be because of the way that he is and his skill set?
Well, I think, we're pretty aggressive with Malik in our play calling. We've tried to be anyway. I think sometimes it comes off more times than the others because of who we're playing. I think sometimes the defense has a lot to do with that, of how they're going to try to contain him. Last week, they were trying to be a big pressure team, and then once he broke the line of scrimmage, it's going to be a big play. And, we've played other teams where, they don't give you as many opportunities with it, so it dictates, how you're calling the game. So, but Malik's, this is what we anticipated him playing like. He's a dynamic player. He's probably, to me, he's the best dual threat quarterback in the country. He's able, his ability to run the football and score touchdowns is equally as important as his ability to throw the football. And, what's awesome about it this year is that he spread the ball around. There's not just one guy. There's a bunch of guys that have caught the ball. We're pretty balanced in our top four catchers are right around the same in yards and catches, which is neat. So now a defense can't just key in on one person. And it shows you that he's just not looking at one person either. He's looking at what the defense has given us, and then let's get those guys the ball. We've been a big play offense, since we've been here in the last 3 years. And that was a big question mark coming in this year. We lost a ton of playmakers. Who's going to be those playmakers? And we've spread it out. It's been a lot of different guys, including Malik. And it's been fun to see how the offense has kind of come together this year. Hopefully this offense will continue to grow and be one of the most explosive offenses in the country.
I guess along that line, your skill guys, last couple games, no turnovers with Malik and the backs. How much more do you feel like they're concentrating or to not put the ball on the ground and be more careful with this check down?
Well, it's something we've talked about. You guys talked about it all last year, and then we came into this year knowing that we had to be better in that regard, and we have been. We've been a lot better taking care of the football. It's going to be critical this week. We got to take care of the football. We got to win that turnover margin. That's going to be a big part of this game. We got to continue to do the things we've done so far. I think it's just you emphasize it. You try to concentrate on it, but we don't harp on it. You can't just sit there and harp on it every single day because now that becomes your only thought. Our guys are playing fast and making plays, and, we're doing it in a way that you're not shooting yourself in the foot, and that's what we got to continue to be able to do.
Scott, on the defensive side of the ball, you guys always harp on creating turnovers. Yeah. They're a team that has kind of handed it out like candy this year. Do you even harp on it even more, or is just kind of business as usual and just let the chips fall where they
may? No, we know, like I said, we know that we want to win the turnover margin. So part of that is trying to create turnovers. You know, we've had some times where we have created some good turnovers in games, and other times we haven't created many at all. You know, it was a big pick we had the other night by Marvin. You know, so you still go out there and you got to play the game. You have to play your technique. You have to do what, you know, within the scheme, and hopefully within that, then you're going to be able to create some turnovers. And, you know, a lot of that has to do with who you're playing and what they're doing that day, and how are they, you know, are they loose with the ball? Are they throwing into coverage? Those type things. And so, you know, we obviously want to win that part of the game. If we win that part of the game, we got a great opportunity to win the game.
Scott, as well as Malik has played, do you think he's raised his draft stock so much that you can't have him back next year?
You know, I don't know about all that. You know, I think he has played well. I think there's still a lot of room for growth. I mean, I think he can continue to get better and better. You know, he has done a lot of things better this year. You know, I think a little bit like Pitt's quarterback. You know, Pitt's quarterback last year was a solid year, you know, really solid year. But what he's done this year is incredible. And now he's probably going to end up being a first-round draft pick at Pitt. You know, so I think, you know, he's a good example of why you come back and play another year, because you can continue to get better and better. And there's a big difference between it being a, you know, a fifth or sixth draft pick and a first-round draft pick. There's a lot of money on the line there.
Scott, when you look at Kentucky and what Levis brings them as the quarterback, what is key for your defense against them?
Well, yeah, I mean, number one, I think you better know where that receiver's at. He's a dynamic player. He's very fast. He's, you know, one of the most explosive guys in the country this year. So you got to understand where he's at, because he will beat you. And, you know, I think the big thing with Levis, you know, if he's comfortable in the pocket, then he can carve you up. I mean, he's got a big-time arm. Very talented player. You got to make him uncomfortable. And that's with most quarterbacks. You know, get him off the spot. You know, try to get him to throw it either earlier than he wants to, or he's out of the pocket. Now he's got to try to make something that way. I think that's the way you kind of try to rattle him a little bit. But he's a good player. You know, they have a good offensive line, and then a couple of that with a really good running game with Rodriguez. I mean, he's a powerful back with great size, and he runs hard. And you know, we didn't do a great job at all in 2019 of tackling. You know, very, very poor tackling performance by us. We got to bring our feet. We got to do a much better job of wrapping up and getting them down. You know, and I think, you know, because if you don't, then they're gonna get those first downs and give you know, Levis and the rest of the offense another opportunity to try to score.
Scott, going forward, you all finished 500 in ACC play. But looking how the league shaped up this year, how much better do you think that is now that somebody else besides Clemson, is, can win a division? There, you know, there's more competition there, and there's less maybe a focus on the ACC being represented in a playoff, and more about, you know, just having better competition with them.
Well, this year in ACC it was as even as it's probably been maybe ever. I don't know. I mean, it was. It's extremely competitive. Anybody could beat anybody this year in the league. It's kind of, if you look at the records for most all the teams, that's what's shown there. And you know, Wake Forest was able to win three or four of those really, really close games right there at the end, and that's why they're right now sitting in the driver's seat. If they can beat Boston College this week, then they'll be our representative on our side. You know, but it's been extremely close. And I think on our side, there's still three teams right now that still mathematically can play for it. And, you know, and we're right there with them. You know, we were, you know, we've documented this. We went one play away on about three of these games, the last 20 seconds, and didn't find a way. Well, a team like Wake found a way, and that's why they're in the driver's seat. So, again, I talked about this. It's encouraging, the fact that we are very competitive and we're right there. We're on the cusp of being something great. And I said that 3 weeks ago. Very optimistic about this team. I'm still there. I think we got a really solid football team, a great foundation for the future. This game will be huge for us this weekend. You know, if we can go handle business against these guys and propel us in the off season, a bowl game, and then in the off season, it's very exciting, I think, what we got coming back and, you know, what kind of team we can have.
Scott, we've talked a lot this year about the youth on this team, but you have 14 guys that you'll honor. And of those 14, six or seven of them have been around for a really long time. Can you just speak to what that group means, and maybe specifically CJ, because he's kind of been that leader?
We talked about that three weeks ago. It's how we want, you know, at least a few more weeks with these guys, these seniors. And, you know, for us, you know, we've been around them for a long time now, 3 years, and we've really gotten to know them as people. You know, I guess out on the outside, everybody gets to see them as a football player, but we get to see them every day as a human being. And, it's been awesome to be around them. You know, from the program when we took over to where we are right now in this building, and they're just so pleasant to be around, and they're fun. They're fun to interact with. And, you know, I want nothing for the best for these guys when they leave here, whether it be playing football and or in life. And, you know, and we want these guys to come back and be a part of this program always. You know, and I always tell our team, you know, don't ever take for granted the opportunity to be around these guys, you know, particularly when it's in their last year, because you're going to think back on this 5 years, 10 years from now, and you're going to remember all the stories and all the cutting up that you did, and all the memories that you're going to have, positive memories with these guys. And so, we're going to miss them. And, you know, we want to send them out on a high note. You know, I think they'll remember this game forever. And so we want it to be a very positive memory once we get done with this game.
Scott, you mentioned CJ. We haven't talked a lot about CJ this year, but he's just been so consistent. Yeah. That's what he's been kind of his whole career. Just how important has he been to a defense that's faced a lot of injuries and a lot of adversity this year?
Yeah, extremely important. CJ, not only to the defense, to our football team. He's our leader. I mean, he's our guy and has been since the day I walked in the building. He's even back then, he's extremely mature. He is very mature now. He does everything you want as a football coach, as a human being. You know, I would hire him in a second. You know, I don't care what business I have. You want him on in your organization. And he's that guy. You know, he's the guy that, you know, if you had a daughter, you want him to marry your daughter. I mean, he's because he's such a solid human being. He does everything right. He's a hard worker. And he's a really good football player, you know. So he's what you want to have on your football team. And I told him, whenever you get finished playing, you come on back here, we'll have a spot for you. So I don't know what else to say. I mean, that's about as good as you can say about a human being. So appreciate CJ. All right. Thanks, guys.
All right, it is a Monday here in Holiday Week on the V Show. You just heard from Coach Satterfield. Just got the weather report. Supposed to be nice, you know, cold, but nice today. Nice Tuesday, nice Wednesday, nice Friday, nice Saturday, and raining and awful on Thursday. We must have done something to somebody in a past life. We got some bad luck going on here. So it is holiday week, and hopefully it'll be a great holiday for you, despite what's a bad outlook in terms of weather for Thanksgiving on Thursday. So much going on this week. We got basketball teams to talk about. Of course, it's the Governor's Cup, so we got the football teams to talk about as we look ahead to that game on Saturday. So a lot of things going on, and we'll try and get some of your texts. I'm sure that whatever viewpoints I have on all of those things will not jibe with all of yours, so you're welcome to. Oh, you're welcome if they do. You know, I don't want to just invite people who want to write in just to say, "Hey, what are you, a jackass?" I mean, if you say, "Boy, I think you hit it really on the head," that with that, that's fine too. We're okay with that. But just you know, I'm sure everybody's got a lot of thoughts, and we'll get to some of those on the other side of this break. So we'll take a short time out, and then we'll come back and get rolling here on this Monday edition of the V Show, as we have a lot of things happening, as all the highways seem to intersect right now. We got football and basketball. Don't forget the number one ranked volleyball team getting ready to wrap up their season and head to the NCAA tournament not far down the road, and all sorts of things going on. NFL stories. How about the Colts yesterday? Where'd that come from? All those things.
Des Fitzpatrick got his first TD in the NFL.
Unbelievable. Crazy weekend. Very entertaining. We'll come back. ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Be a part of the show. Text Bobby V on the UPS Jobs text line at 437-9680.
All right. Obviously, the big story of the week is the football game Saturday. But that's Saturday, and we'll have guests, and I'm going to talk about it today, too. But the basketball game is more recent, and got some thoughts on that for this past weekend because, people are losing their minds. I really don't, you know, I don't like when it sounds, if you interpret it like I'm lecturing, because I'm not trying to do that, and I'm not, you know, I'm really not. But I don't understand it, having been in sports my whole life. The fan base is on both camps now. I mean, the Kentucky football fans who are you know, they're losing their minds. I mean, I don't know. I guess they really thought they were going to get into the playoff or something. I don't know. I mean, they have a chance for a 10-win season still. And, you know, they've been good. I mean, it's not like this is old hat. That's the thing that I kind of always bring up. You have to consider what's going on in the timeline, the spectrum of history and recent history. And, you know, no disrespect, but this isn't Alabama. This is not, you know, Ohio State. This is a place that when you know, 8 wins was, you know, they used to even say that. It was kind of realistic of them. We used to talk about how the basketball fans were ready, you know, anytime they lost a game were ready to you know, jump off bridges. But football, they understood, you know, let's get to 6 wins, let's get to a bowl game. Every once in a while, let's have that big year where maybe we can get to 8 or 9. And they've gotten to 10, and they've had a great year this year. And, you know, there's still a lot to play for. So I don't understand the chagrin. But, you know, that part is even more mystifying to me. The Louisville basketball fans are just absolute. I mean, everybody is 3 games in without the head coach here are just the discussion, you know. And again, because the names that they're playing, you know, Furman and Detroit and, you know, which is understandable to a degree, but it's not completely understandable because Furman's a good team. I know they went out and lost the game after that, but they're still a pretty good team. Detroit, I don't think, is as good as Furman is, but they have, you know, it's about matchups. And the problem is, you know, they looked good against Navy because Navy doesn't have a lot of guys who are dual threats, who can beat you off the bounce or can shoot off the pass on the perimeter. You know, this, and they were really fired up to play. I'm going to get to that in a minute, too. I got to see if I can find these quotes. They're right here. I circled them in the paper because I didn't hear these at the time, obviously. We're on the air on the radio, so if he said these in the press conference, I was somewhat shocked. But nonetheless, you know, they came out and they played a really good defense against Navy. And then they had a stretch in this game where, quite honestly, they looked like everybody, you know, the crowd gave them a standing ovation. I mean, I don't know if they showed it on TV, but they gave them a standing ovation that stretch where they had an 18-0 run that went from the end of the first half and bridged to the start of the second half. And it was unbelievable. I mean, they just were doing, they looked like a different team completely. And you said to yourself, okay, when I used to coach, you know, that's what we used to call it, the aha moment. You know, that's where they see, okay, this is what we're trying to do. And usually they're really reluctant to give that up because everybody wants to be successful and have fun. And that's a whole lot more fun to play that way. So, you know, it looked like they were really dialed into it. And then the rest of the game was, you know, meh again. And so they wound up hanging on for a 6-point win. And there's a lot of places to point your fingers because they, you know, they didn't get – defensively, they didn't make plays. But this is the part that's astounding to me, that the guy said this. And I'm sure you saw this. And forgive me if I'm late to the party. Maybe you've already talked about it at length. I don't know. But Malik Williams says – something that's eye-opening is just consistency. That's innocent enough. He says, consistency in guys, not even just the play, but just the attitude and the want and the mood to be in it every day. That's the number one thing for us right now, just bringing it every day. And when Mike said they were playing well, he said the guys were into it. You know, because he was talking about against Navy how they played such good defense because he gave them a goal. Let's hold them to 60, and they held them right on that number. But again, they're talking about the guys were into it. And then Dre Davis said, I think we had spurts where I felt as though all 5 guys were bought in. As you see, we went on a big run in part of the game. That was just due to our main focus on defensive end, getting stops and running. I think we have spurts. We just have to put a collective 40 minutes together. Mike Pegues also said our team has not embraced yet the defensive identity of what this team needs to be. So I don't. That's a little alarming because, you know, I don't have a problem. I really don't. If, you know, people are mad they didn't play as well as they can. Whatever. You can get mad at whatever you want. It's America. I mean, that's the beauty of our country. Like and love whatever you don't like, whatever you want. But the fact is the thought that they've got to get better is not troubling to me because this is very early to play. Even though they have experienced players, they've got a bunch of new players, different players coming from different systems, and it takes a long time to get everybody to be on the same page. But the buy-in part is really alarming. That's troubling to imply that they haven't bought in. And the only thing I will say is, of all the places where the head coach being out translates most dramatically, that's where. Because, you know, some of the fans got mad, at, especially offensively, the way they played in recent years. And I think Chris felt the same way. He's overhauled their offense. He brought in Coach McMaines to try and really, you know, spearhead that. So everybody's on, you want to use that term again, everybody's on the same page there. They wanted to revamp their offense. But defensively, I mean, that's the foundation of Chris's house. I mean, that is what he's all about. And it's about the you know, playing that pack line and really, really not allowing flybys and really playing with a great sense of focus and purpose. And they haven't done that. And the bad thing is, the other teams are not shooting great percentages. I mean, Detroit only shot 40%, I think it was. And that should give you a chance to get, you know, some things going. But they're not rebounding. They don't have a sense of purpose. As much as they don't have a sense of purpose on the defensive end, they have no sense of purpose on the rebounding end. Especially, I mean, this game they did on the offensive end for some reason. The last two games, they got 2 offensive rebounds and 4 offensive rebounds. 2 and 4 in the two games, that made 6 in the two games combined. This game, they got 10 offensive rebounds. And they shot a good percentage, so there was not that many offensive rebounds to begin with. But they got 10 offensive rebounds. That was a big deal. That arguably may have won them the game. But the fact of the matter is, on the defensive end, there's no sense of urgency to go get the basketball. The only guy who had it was Sam Williamson in the first half. He came in and was taking, you know, he looked like a Chibwe. He was trying to get everything in the building. And that was a big part of their run when he came in and got it going. They started to get clean rebounds. You can't run without the ball, and you can't run effectively without clean rebounds to get the ball. I mean, if you get the ball, that's obviously the first objective, but if you're getting it because the ball's being slapped around, tapped around, knocked, the two guys are fighting for it, it bounces 3 times, the guy picks it up in the corner, you're not really getting much of a fast break, because at least a couple of guys on the other team are probably already, just as a precaution, starting to head back because they know they may not come up with the ball, and so you don't have a real chance to beat them down the floor. You got to get that clean rebound, get it in somebody's hands who can really push it, and then get to spots and get good spacing. And they do that at times, but not often enough. So what I'm looking at is, you know, you want to be upset. I mean, the things I don't like, I can understand about being upset, but the things that are just writing off. You know, I guess I don't know. I can't get in everybody's head, so I don't know what the motivation is for this. They're still mad that, you know, they pushed out Rick or something. He's winning like crazy up at Iona now, and you know, Jurich went, and I don't know. They, you know, there's been a whole vibe that, you know, that these guys are not the right guys in a certain segment of the fan base. And I don't completely, in fact, I don't really get that at all, to be honest with you. But the way that the thing went down with Dino and everything was really unfortunate. That was terrible. That was a big mistake. But I'm looking at them in terms of the caliber of players they now have here and the commitment to the way they want to play. I understand both of them. Somebody wrote, well, here we go. We've been, you know, fed a bill of goods again. These guys aren't as good as we were told they were. I don't see that. I mean, Matt Cross couldn't play yesterday. I was really afraid he was having a heart attack. Honest to God, it was right in front of us. He was standing there, and all of a sudden, he literally visibly started wobbling and put his hands on his knees, and I thought, oh, my God, you know, let's not have one of these moments. But they said it was just a dehydration or food poisoning or something. I don't know. They never really got specific about it, but he had to come out, and that's a big loss for them because he came down in that little barrage where he came down and caught a ball on the break, and right off the break caught it and let it go, and you know, that's a great weapon. He was a good 23 feet away and bang, and he, you know, he makes one, he's liable to make 4 or 5. So I mean, you know, he's a terrific player. I said it, I put it out on Twitter, and I will stand by it. Jared West is as good a collegiate defender as I've seen, as good as I've seen. And I watched the game yesterday. I watched a lot of the stuff that fans don't watch. I feel like a biscuit when he talks about line play. You know, everybody's watching the guy making open field runs, and he's looking at the guards and the tackles. I mean, I watched him. And they, you know, Davis, the coach's son, Mike's son, Antoine, is a hell of a player. He really is a very, very good player. And he plays 38 minutes for them, and they, you know, he's got the green light, and they know that he's kind of their bread and butter. And they came down and ran him off so many screens. It had to be exhausting for West, and he wouldn't let him catch the ball. Would not let him catch the ball. He had whatever he had, 20-some-odd points, 27 or something. I don't have the stats in front of me. But, I mean, I charted this. He scored two baskets the entire game, two, in 38 minutes when West was his primary defender. Twice. He made two baskets. That's it. So, I mean, there was a stretch where he kept him off the board for about 10 solid minutes. When he got going was when he was out of the game. Or occasionally, you know, he was trying very hard not to switch, but a couple of times they had a switch. And as soon as he had a switch, man, then he was on. You know, the big guys are having a hell of a bad time defending right now. Malik and Withers are really struggling defensively. I mean, and the teams now, if they get them on a switch, their eyes light up. They just go and they try and take them and go right to the basket, and they've got to do better.
Why is Jalen taking late game threes, by the way?
Well, that's another thing. That's a third thing. That's a situation awareness. I get into a big debate with a guy in the last game about their play at the end of games, and you know they need to pull the ball out and run. And I was saying you can't play that way in today's game. You just can't. You've got to keep running your offense, but it doesn't mean you just hoist up anything you see. I mean, I agree with that. And why he thinks when the game's on the line early in the shot clock, he's got to take a 24-footer. I have no idea. I mean, if you listen to the tape of the game, I didn't do it on purpose. I'm not trying to embarrass the kid or anything, but I was so startled that he would choose to do that. I actually said, oh. So I'm sure I spoke collectively for the fan base. Why? I don't know. But you know, those are things that, again, when Chris gets back, I imagine they'll have a conversation about. But that's an important part of the game. It absolutely is, but it is in the building of the house of a team. That's, you know, making sure you're putting the right roof tiles on, and it's important. If you don't, your house is going to leak and everything. But you got to get the house built first, and they're still worrying about building the house right now, and that house is not being put together the way they want to see it. I mean, it's unbelievable. That stretch looked dynamic. I was like, all right, they've got it now. That was their aha experience. You're never quite sure when it's going to happen, and then it just went away. But I mean, they have weapons. Noah Locke, when the game was on the line, they ran a play that they hadn't really practiced that much. I mean, which, if you watch it, and I'm sure some of you do go back and watch it, poor Dre didn't know where the hell he was supposed to go. He came out, he went to the left corner, the right corner, back to the left corner, but he was not really involved in the main thrust of the play. They took Locke from the left side, ran him around to the right elbow, and to get a handoff from, I think it was Malik, I'm not sure, one of the postmen, and he just caught it behind the screen and just let it go. I mean, that's the tough skill, especially when you're not, you know, 6'6 or 6'7, because even if the guy who's guarding the postman puts his hand up, it's still a challenge shot. But he just caught it, let it go, and that was the stick in the eye. That was the shot that pretty much, got them over the hump, I think. They said they hadn't run it, but I thought they ran a very similar play in the first half. If not, it wasn't a set play, then it just happened to be the same action that he wound up. If you go back and watch the tape, he makes the same shot in the first half where he comes off a screen, gets the handoff, and shoots it right behind the screen without a dribble. Tough to stop. So he gives them a great weapon. As I've said, I will stand by what I said. West on the ball is spectacular. Down the stretch, he knocked the ball away. He had three steals, and he was responsible for at least three more, where he knocks the ball away and he doesn't get it. His teammate does, and he gets credit for the steal. Or the one late in the game he knocked away. Remember the crazy scramble on the sideline? Everybody was falling all over each other, and then it wound up being Louisville ball. They would have had a shot clock violation anyway, because I think it went out of bounds when there was one on the shot clock. But he caused that. He doesn't get credit for that. There's a lot of things he doesn't get credit for. And people go by the stat sheet, which you should to some degree. But, I mean, of all the guys who buys into it, he doesn't care if he takes three shots, one shot, no shots. He is just, let me go guard their best player, and thrives on it. And everybody responds to that. It's hard not to. When you see a guy working that hard, you got to really be a pig not to be working on your guy, because, I mean, he's killing himself. And, you know, get you some easy shots, because it creates some turnovers. Again, that to me, so here's the thing. They aren't playing at the level they need to. They showed a stretch where they can play at that level. I think they have good players. I really do. They need to get more out of the post players. The things that they need to improve are the kinds of things that a head coach usually gets better response to. I'm sorry, but they're defensive things largely. Defense and rebounding. And so, you know, those are the things they'll tighten up. I think Mike has done as good a job as you can do, given the reality of the situation, which is he has to go back in whatever it is, a week, to sliding over a chair. And he can't be, you know, burning those bridges. You can't. I mean, he can't just kill these guys. Although I was told, you know, Paul went to practice, and Mike told us himself, he jumped them pretty good, you know, going into this game. He really was, you know, jumping on them about the rebounding, and they rebounded better on the offensive end, but the defensive end there still wasn't as much of a progress. So there's a whole bunch of things there that they've got to tighten up. The things that are you know, the roof, if you will, I think those are things the head coach will adjust, because that's what head coaches do. They will. I don't think you'll be comfortable taking 30-footers with you know, a game on the line like that when you haven't made any. I mean, it's different if he was Cross, for example, and you know, but I don't know. I wonder when it gets in guys' heads. I can, let me show people in the NBA I can shoot from out here. That's they went through that with Montrez for a while, and then he realized he got to the NBA because they don't care about that. They care about running and rebounding. If you do that, you can get the other stuff done, and he's been a force at the NBA level. So guys have to figure that out, and the head coach can help them figure that out. So there's you know, that part of it, but the buying in part of it, I'm confused about that. I don't know any of these kids, obviously. You know, you just gauge by the game in the cracks, as I call it, when they come out. What does their attitude look like, and you know, how are they warming up? For example, there's at least one guy I know. If he's still here, I'll be shocked. I'm not going to mention specifically who, but he looks like he's disgusted that he's not playing at all. That narrows it down. You must know what I'm talking about. And so I don't know. We'll see how it plays out. But my point is, you know, the buying in part, the coach generally will get to the bottom of that, because at some point he's going to, you know, either say, this is what we need from you, and if you don't want to give it to us, you're not going to play. You know, and guys will come to the realization that, you know, I don't want to sit on the bench. I want to play. And they'll buy in. And you have people that I think bring that themselves, like Malik brings that attitude, Jared West brings that attitude. So you have enough guys that I think are going to do that. But as I said, I don't know these guys, so maybe some of them came here thinking, hey, you know, this guy will see, recognize my genius, you know, and he's going to let me, you know, shine here, you know, the way that I'm going to play. I mean, kids don't think things through, you know. They used to, I had a kid come in who was absolutely hell-bent that he should be playing out. I made him number up like 20 minutes a game. I said, okay, show me who you think we should take out of here. You know, there's 200 minutes out there. That's what there are. There's 200 minutes to divide over five positions on the court. So who should we take? You know, Tom out? No, he's playing great. All right, we can't do that. How about this guy? And we went through the whole thing. I said, so tell me who you would play. And he goes and he puts his lineups together, and I add it up, and he's got like 270 minutes. I was like, that's the problem. It's not like, you know, these guys practiced really well. Could we play with seven for a while? You don't mind, do you? I mean, so it doesn't work that way. So at some point, guys have got to, they don't think that through. They know, yeah, we've got other good players. I want to be around good players, but I'm still going to be, you know, one of the primary focuses, because this guy recognizes how great I'm going to be. And I don't know that they're like that. I hope they're not, because this team is going to have a hard time being successful if that's the case, because I think they're going to need different people different nights. You know, Roosevelt Wheeler came in two games ago and gave them a big lift, and but Sidney Curry came in the other day. He'd been practicing really well, and they gave him a shot. And if you look at it, he had two baskets and three rebounds in like 4 minutes. So, I mean, I you know, and I don't know. We'll see what the lineup comes out to be. He's starting the same group, and I imagine he'll do that until Chris gets back. And then if Chris wants to adjust it, you know, maybe he will. But I'm not sure, you know, what combinations are going to be the best. They, you know, they're not rebounding great. So I thought they had a nice little stretch when they played small. They moved Sam to four, and they had him with Dre at the same time. Those two guys, they put up between the two of them. They had, I think it was, you know, so the three position gave them 17 rebounds and, I don't know, 25 points or something like that. I mean, that's a great combination there, although it wasn't all at three because Sam played a little bit at four. But, you know, they may have to look at that. I don't know, you know, where Cross fits in. Maybe they just keep him coming off the bench because he gives them some offense. I don't know. But my point is disgust, the absolute flabbergastedness of, you know, the fan base doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, I'm not suggesting, like I said, oh, we should just settle for playing at that level. No, nobody's suggesting that. But the you know, scorched earth approach to it, like I said, bark up a tree, that's fine. I try and come here and tell you what I think the trees to bark up at are. That was an awkward English sentence, but you got the gist of it. And I don't think a lot of the barking is up the right tree. Yeah, I mean, they've got to get on the same page defensively. Oh, and that's the other thing, by the way, that's going to be interesting for me to see how Chris plays that out. There's two things that really, in the overview of the house, the blueprint itself, concerns me. I don't think they understand this offense at all. I really don't. You cannot have the ball stay stationary as long as they have it stay stationary and play this offense well. The ball has to move. He uses the term start the dominoes. I used to use the term start the merry-go-round. But you can't get them to start chasing you when everybody and the ball itself is stationary. Why would they start chasing you? The whole premise of the thing is to get them chasing. And then once somebody chases, you make the next pass. The ball always moves faster than a player can. So you make, you know, two quick passes and you get a wide open look. They still, the damn pick and roll has poisoned the game. Nobody understands how to play without the pick and roll now. It's always the crutch for them. If things go bad, throw it to the top. Everybody stand still. Wave the big guy up. Let him come and run the guy off the screen for nothing. Nothing. Watch how many times the guy goes off that screen and the big guy maybe blitzes him for a second and then recovers back to his man and they're right back where they started. The point guard has the ball. Instead of having it in the middle of the floor, he has it on the side of the floor. But nobody's moved. There's nobody open. The merry-go-round hasn't started. The dominoes haven't begun to fall. And yeah, so what is the fascination with this play? As if they discovered plutonium. Get the ball moving. Get the players moving. It is, you know, and again, don't get me wrong. It's not the only way to play. There are some people who live and thrive on the pick and roll, and if they want to do it, that's fine. But we're told that this offense is designed to get the dominoes falling. So if that's the case, you can't keep the ball stationary as much as they are. They're still holding it and holding it. And it's just, it's very tough. That's when the stretch, see, what happens with them is when they had a couple of good stretches there, when they had that one good stretch, they got the other team had to start chasing them because Louisville was getting the ball off of turnovers a lot, live ball turnovers. So you're kind of defensively, you're automatically chasing. You don't have time to come back and get yourself set and get in your stance and find your man. You're scrambling. You're running around trying, I get this guy, you take that one. They're already chasing. So you've already got the first hurdle cleared. You've already started the merry-go-round. So once you do that, then you're getting good shots. And they did, and they scored, and they made a great run. They scored 18 points in a row. But two things about that. One, last year, I think they played the whole season and never made more than 8 steals in a game. The last two games they've had, I think, was it 14 and 9? And I hate to say it, but I wonder if that's not because Chris isn't here, because they're taking more chances, and he doesn't really like them to take chances. He wants them to make sure they're staying. It's kind of like in, you know, defensively in football when they tell you, you know, stay in your lane, stay in your – he wants them to do that. And so if they go back to really just playing containment – I'm not sure they're going to get these easy shots. I'm going to be curious what they're pressing. We didn't see them press other than at the ends of games, kind of in desperation last year. They've run some pressure this year, and I think that's good in the sense that if you want to play faster, you need to have a way to artificially speed up the game, and that's how you do it, with pressure. So, okay, I understand that. But what are they going to do? Are they pressing just in the hope the other team goes faster? Are they trying to get steals? You know, are they going to double team and then create a second double team, or is it going to be just that one trap where the ball comes in and then fall back and go back into a pack line? They got answers to find there, and I don't know what they are because I can't tell from watching them what they're really trying to do there. And the same thing on the offensive end. Will they be able to get the other team with the merry-go-round going if they don't get steals? Because I think that's why the game had that run. They got live ball turnovers, and they were converting, and then all of a sudden we were off to the races. But the rest of the time, they're back, and the guy, and as much as I love Jared, I think he's a good offensive player too. He's still got that mindset of the modern-day point guard, which is bounce, 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 look, 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 bounce, bounce, finally wave the guy up, have him come up, go off the screen, do nothing, and then you're right back where you started. And that's what last year was so much of, and they can't fall back into that. Again, the whole purpose of any offense, this is not particularly profound, but when you state it this way, it gives clarity to it. The whole point of any offense you run is to make yourself hard to guard, right? That's the whole point of it. You're trying to make yourself difficult to guard. Whether you choose to do it, you know, with a different way, which is fine. You want to run all ball screens or whatever you want to run. You want to run a flex. Nobody does that anymore, but okay, be hard to guard. This the way you're hard to guard is to start the merry-go-round, and they're not getting that merry-go-round started enough to make themselves difficult to guard. And so they got, you know, they shot a good percentage because I think that's the whole point. They have good players. I don't know this thought, well, these guys, we've fed a bell of goods. They're not as good as we thought they were again. No, they're pretty good. They just don't really know what the hell they're trying to do yet. And I think that's solvable, but and that's why I said bark up the proper tree. I do think there are some things they should understand more than they understand already. With Mike the coach, or if I were the coach, or if you were the coach, and I don't completely grasp that, but that's the part that concerns me. Sometimes you don't look like you grasp it because ultimately you haven't really bought into the whole thing yet. And that's what I'm wondering about. When you heard the comments from the players about, you know, when we're all bought in, we're good. What's the problem with buying in exactly? What the hell's going on there? That I don't get. So, you know, we'll see. We'll keep an eye on that as they go forward. We'll find out. Kentucky, of course, back in action tonight in the basketball side, taking on Albany. This is a little bit of a factoid here. By the way, speaking of factoids, did you know this? That when Mike Davis came in and coached against Louisville on this game, he became only the second coach in history to bring four different colleges and universities to play against Louisville. Would you like to guess who the other one is? Anybody want to guess? You can text us a guess.
Bob Huggins?
No. Ooh, that wouldn't have been a terrible guess, actually, but it's not. All right, I'll give you the answer. It is actually UK.
No. Don't do that. Let the text on guess.
No, I already gave the clue away. UK's former coach, Eddie Sutton. Because the one that people forget about is he took Oklahoma State to the NCAA tournament, and they played Louisville in the NCAA tournament way back in 93, I think. And so he took Creighton and Arkansas, and of course Kentucky was every year, and then Oklahoma State. So there you go. So that's he was the only other one to do it, and Mike has done it as well, Mike Davis. So there's that. Okay, we'll get some texts, your thoughts on the football game. I think I got a couple things about it. You know, I'm not a football analyst by nature, so I try and find things that shed some light on it that other people who are, or more importantly, objective people rather than subjective people. Because if you want to, you can make a case for either team to win this game, really. I mean, obviously, you really can. You may look at it as a fan of one team or the other and say, that's ridiculous, we're going to stomp them. Maybe you will, I don't know. But there are rational analytics and analysis that would say they both certainly have a chance to win this game. But I'm trying to look at it where, you know, I'm not going to ignore that and focus on this, ignore that and focus on this. Just look at some things that will give you an idea of what the fact of the matter is. And so we'll take a look at some of those things. And by the way, another good season by Lou City. Boy, they were head 2-0 in this game.
Some controversy in that one. Did you hear about it?
What happened?
Well, no, I didn't watch the game. So, you know, I'm going by my friends who were at the watch party at Saints. But supposedly they were up 2-0 going into, I think, the 83rd minute Tampa Bay scored.
They were ahead by two goals with less than 10 minutes to play in regulation time.
Right. So Tampa
Bay
cuts
it even more powerful.
Tampa Bay cuts it to 1. In the 83rd minute, then there's 4 minutes of injury time added at the end of the game. And in the
I thought there was more than that.
See, that's the thing. There was 4 minutes of injury time, and in the 96th minute, Tampa Bay scores to tie it. And then they won it in overtime. They got a goal in the 105th minute.
Yes, I saw that
minute.
They put plus the actual stat sheet of the game said it was plus 7 in stoppage time.
Yeah. It was plus 4. It was 4 minutes of injury time, and then
SOBs.
Well, I didn't see the game. I don't know if it was one of those things where there was 4 minutes of stoppage time and somebody went down immediately and was on the ground for 2 minutes. I don't know. But it was 4 minutes of injury time, and they scored in the 96th minute. I haven't watched the game. I just was, you know, I was at a Friendsgiving and I was, you know, looking at it and I was stoked and we were going back and forth and, you know, all excited. Blue City was up. And then all of a sudden, yeah, they weren't.
Well,
so I haven't watched the game, haven't seen the replay. But if you have insight, by all means, text that in along with some, you know, your questions about basketball, because there's a lot of good ones here. 437-9680 UPS Jobs text line. We can take a top of the hour break and, you know, get to the text line on the other side if you'd like.
Well, that sounds like a plan. That's why you are the big head of producer. So you do your job and I'll do mine and nary the train shall meet. That didn't make a lick of sense, but that's where we're going to break on that note here on ESPN 680 and 105.7.
Are you ready for a job that gets you more? UPS is hiring now. As a warehouse worker, you'll earn up to $21 per hour, and you might even be eligible for a program that helps you with thousands of dollars for college, in many cases, tuition-free. Search and apply now at upsjobsky.com.
Card Nation, this is attorney Alex White with SueDistractedDriver.com. Our law firm is a team of dedicated attorneys ready to fight for you. If you get injured because of someone else's negligence, their insurance company already has a legal team, and now so do you. If you or a friend or loved one are injured, find your attorney at SueDistractedDriver.com.
This is an advertisement.